Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, your host for this weekend show, and also your host throughout the week on our website, podcast, and YouTube channel. Just search the KE Report, and that's where you can find all our daily editorials and company updates we release from throughout the week. And there's a lot of company updates because there's a lot of news being released, especially out of the resource stocks that we follow. In this weekend show, we're going to spend the first half of the show talking metals and the back half of the show talking energy. To talk metals with us, we have Brian London joining us, editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host down at the New Orleans Investment Conference this year, happening right around and just before Halloween. So, Brian, a quick overview of precious metals here. I'm hearing more the consensus being that gold and silver, after this correction, and the correction that is a lot deeper for silver, is continued volatility and a range-bound trade. No one knows how long the range-bound trade is going to last, but when you consider the spread that silver has in terms of its high in about 120 and now trading in the 70s, there's a lot of work to do here. So it does seem like people are expecting maybe a longer consolidation in range-bound trading. Curious what you have to say now that we're, for the most part, a month into this correction.
Yeah, you know, Corey, it's, we think volatility, but when we say volatility, we're really hearkening back to that tremendous downdraft at the end of January, very tail end of January, the big correction that we were kind of sensing was coming up. And boy, you know, did we get it good and hard. But since then, we've had a feeble, halting recovery, more of a sideways trading in both gold and silver. Gold lost about $1,000. Silver lost about $50. It was pretty harsh of a correction. But since then, volatility has actually been falling. If you look at, for instance, gold's Bollinger Bands, you can see that those bands are pinching again, that the bandwidth is rapidly collapsing. And just, you know, looking at it roughly and looking at the past patterns during this now 2-year-old bull market in gold, it seems to me that we've got probably between a couple of weeks and maybe even a couple of months of this sideways trading before we embark on the next rally. So it's going to happen. I'm very satisfied with where we are, very sanguine about where we are. I don't think this bull market is derailed by any means. And this is the kind of time, these are the periods that we've seen over the course of this bull market where you have a chance to go in and pick up some good buys. And this market, as you mentioned, is replete with them. There are so many companies out there that are now cashed up. They have great targets, and we're getting into the drill season. So it's exciting. I think there's a lot of opportunity ahead.
Yeah, Brian, it's an interesting juxtaposition of still pretty strong metals prices on a historic basis. If you think about gold in the neighborhood of 5,000 and silver in the 70s. And yet, with all this good work and money raised and companies plowing forward, I'm amazed at how some of these stocks have sold off 30, 40, even 50% just in the last 3 to 4 weeks. So are you more tempted now to go bottom fishing and start accumulating into the weakness in some of these pullbacks?
In some cases, yes. Companies that I really like, a lot of the companies that I'm following have had that kind of those kinds of declines or drops, but there are some bargains out there. And you know, what's really exciting to me and somewhat frustrating is that I'm finding new stories almost every day. And my portfolio is already bulging at the seams. But there are new stories that I'm discovering quite frequently now. And it's hard for me to fit them in the portfolio. I've added a couple here and there, but there's a lot of opportunity out there. And I think that reflects more, that is more in the exploration side of things. I'm finding companies that have great targets, in some cases, discoveries that the market has not yet appreciated, and they've got the money to drill them off.
Brian, talk to us about drill programs then, because boy, oh boy, it seems like everybody is drilling. Everybody has a big drill program, or they've upsized their drill program. We're starting to see some results coming out, but it's going to be months of back-to-back drill result news, and good drill results are getting rewarded, but talk to us about a couple programs that either have released some results or have results coming that you're watching and excited about.
Yeah, you know, as we're talking, I'm looking at my portfolio, and I have to be careful because a couple of these have not been released yet in our monthly gold newsletter and only in our alert service. So I can't mention those, but there are some, like K2 Gold is really a smart money play right now. They have two targets, two projects, one in Nevada and one in California that will be drilled in the weeks just ahead. And are being one that is the one in Nevada that is being drilled right now. Both have upside like I rarely see in the market. So smart money is actually coming in into that play. It has a fairly large market cap for an exploration company, but it is in the discovery group and it's backed by some smart people who love these targets. And I'm one of them. I bought that myself recently at these levels because I'm excited about what's coming up. There's more out there as I'm looking at the portfolio. Prince Silver is drilling away. All they need to do, either in this drill program or in the next one, which they will embark on immediately following this one, they'll be able to put out a resource estimate that should show well over 100 million ounces of silver in Nevada, and they are in no way priced anyway commensurate with that. So I like them right now. What else looks really good on now? Tiger Gold is a fairly new recommendation in Gold Newsletter. It is in Colombia next to some monster deposits, and it seems to be a repeat. It's basically got a couple of million ounces of fairly low-grade gold already in resource. So it's not hitting the high grades that some of its neighbors have, but it's still got a couple of million ounces of mineable gold and more targets and building on that and well-funded with a great management team. So I think that has some room to run, still a fairly low market cap, especially in relation to the resource it already has. A recent recommendation that I've made that I personally invested in, and I do own Tiger Gold as well, is Torr Metals, T-O-R-R. They are looking for a New Afton-type copper-gold porphyry discovery in BC. They have found the signature. They missed on their first couple of holes, and they have gotten the structural information where it looks like they are vectoring in on a potential discovery. And they have another project they just released news on that looks very exciting as well. It has not moved yet. It's very early stage and fairly low market cap with a good technical team that I like a lot. So yeah, those are ones that I really like right now.
Well, Brian, that brings up an interesting point of the different flavors of exploration companies. There are some that are pre-discovery that generally have a smaller market cap because they haven't made a discovery yet. But when they hit, they can be rewarded in a big way, but you're taking a lot more risk. There's other companies that have proven that there's something there. There's some smoke there and they're following up and they're still pre-resource, but they're following up on holes where maybe they do have a little bit of data to go on. And then there's companies that have already delineated resources that are pressing the envelope and trying to expand and trying to hit known areas. Which ones animate you more in this kind of a market?
Well, as you know, I look at each story individually. In some cases, the market has yet to appreciate a discovery that, you know, with my nose after decades in this business, I can kind of sniff out a new discovery from early results, and the market doesn't always appreciate that. There is, and I don't mean to tease, there is one company I'm very excited about that is in that situation that's going to be revealed in the next issue of Gold Newsletter next week and has already been put out there in our alert service. So not to tease people, but I can't talk about it, but it is a case where they've got a discovery. They got the same kinds of grades as other discoveries along trend. And the market, their market cap's only about $40 million right now, but they've got more targets and they know what to do with. And I see a period of rapid growth ahead. You know, another one that would fit that model, though, is Aris Minerals in Kazakhstan for copper gold porphyries. I had a detailed look at that company, an update with management at VRIC a few weeks back. And I'm very excited about being a shareholder in that company over the year ahead. They've got lots of money, lots of drilling. They were recently dropped in their joint venture of Teck. And that's created a bit of weakness in the stock. But the real story has been the properties that they own, huge properties they own that they own 100%. And they have three targets that any one of which drilled out over the last year could multiply this company's market cap. So I'm very excited about that. And it's kind of under the radar right now.
Brian, what do you make of this environment where everyone seems to be cashed up, everyone has a good drill program, and we're hearing about some of these jurisdictions like Kazakhstan, even they're actually just all over. I've heard of so many different places being drilled that I sometimes hadn't even heard of in my whole career in this sector. What does this tell you about the market, and what do you think about these essentially new areas that are getting exploration?
Yeah, you know, it's funny to me how this has all evolved. If you go back in the 90s, the world was our oyster, and there were lots of new frontiers that were being opened up for mineral exploration. And even through the 2000s, there was no hesitation in going all over the world for projects, and companies were exploring and attracting money for their projects all over the world. And over the past 10 years or so, that's all kind of pulled back, where there seems to be lots of opportunities in North America and Central and South America. And, you know, particularly if a project is in Canada or the Western US, it's enjoyed a premium in the market. So I think it's actually a bit, you know, more closed off and parochial these days than it has been in many years past. Speaking of Kazakhstan, when Aris was first coming public, even pre-public, I was invited to participate in the financing and just couldn't find my way to do it with, you know, a project in Kazakhstan. I had invested in Kazakhstan in the mid-90s and, you know, did not really have a great experience with that. But after talking with management over the last year or so, pre their big hit about a year and a half ago, I came away very comfortable with with that regime, with that jurisdiction. In fact, it's on my bucket list as one of the places I really want to visit right now. And I've never said that before in my life. So I think that actually is a great jurisdiction for exploration. More generally speaking, if you get out of North and South America, generally, and you know, there are some specific areas in South America that are can be concerning. But when you get into riskier jurisdictions, the project has to be just that much better than it would have to be if it were set in, say, Nevada. That's geologically and otherwise. You know, in Nevada, if you can get half a gram gold in a bulk deposit, open pittable deposit, well, that works. In a lot of other places in the world, it just doesn't work, either due to infrastructure or political risk. So it's a balancing act, and every project needs to be judged according to all those factors.
Well, Brian, speaking of a balancing act, everybody has a portfolio of stocks, and at one point in time, they want to horse trade them and trade one for another. Do you have any parameters when you get into an investment as far as what your goal is to exit? Is there a certain resource size that you want to see it get to? Is there a certain percentage move in the stock? Is it waiting on a particular drill program and at the end of that, deciding whether you want to buy, hold, or sell? Do you have any parameters around how you exit positions to then start new positions?
Yeah, I have to judge it on its merits currently. You know, it's kind of accepted in the industry that you go into an investment with certain assumptions, and as the for an investment, and as the company achieves those milestones or doesn't achieve those milestones, you judge it on whether you want to keep it in the portfolio. And sometimes the story changes, and you have to weigh those changes and the upside potential. Assuming that you have a limited number of companies that you can accurately or adequately keep track of in your portfolio, then when a new company comes into that portfolio, it has to beat something else out. So that's the way I look at it, is if I'm going to add a new something new, I have to have a tough look at my portfolio and rank that new idea, that new company against everything else that I've already liked and put in my portfolio. And if it beats out one or two or three other positions, well, it's earned a place in my portfolio. And I have to look at those one, two, or three positions that it's more exciting than and decide whether I want to keep those in the portfolio. In most cases, you want to sell something to buy something. And that's frankly where I'm at in this market because I'm fairly fully invested. I've taken some profits and I've taken some out of the market. But what's currently in my portfolio, there's not a lot of available cash. So I have to make those tough decisions to sell something to buy something new.
So on this theme then, Brian, let's look outside of precious metals, because as much as still a lot of people see great buying opportunities for the precious metal stocks, fact of the matter is, I think a lot of the easy money has been made. A lot of these stocks are 3, 4, even 10x off of where they were a year and a half ago, which has a lot of people looking at other resource sectors. Copper has been doing well, and those stocks also have been doing well. Haven't given the same sort of gains as the precious metals. Lithium is back on people's radar. Uranium stocks have been doing pretty well, but those have also been volatile in a sense. And then there's all these other smaller market critical minerals. A lot of those stocks have done well, but still a lot have pulled back. So, what opportunities are you seeing in other areas in terms of that rotation of money, cashing in on some of your precious metals gains and moving it into other areas?
Yeah, again, I look at companies on an individual basis. I love copper. I like a lot of the base metal plays. And for me to recommend a new copper play or base metal play, I'm not out there actively looking for companies in copper or uranium, et cetera. I have to judge that on my against my bullish background, bullish view on the metal or the element, and then it has to beat something else out that's in my portfolio. I do, generally speaking, like copper a lot. I like uranium at these levels. I think there's some catch up. I don't think the uranium stocks are really reflecting the moves that uranium has been making or will be making. So I'm starting to look a little more closely at that area. But I take each company as it comes, as it's presented to me, as its story develops, and I judge it on that basis. I'm not really that interested in making thematic plays because this is a business and industry largely on the exploration and development end of it that is driven by the individual stories. You know, if I was looking at wanting to make a thematic bet on copper, I would probably be looking at copper producers. But what I'm looking for now are the companies that have the potential to either increase value of a project that they've made a discovery and they're developing and the market is not yet pricing correctly, or have a good chance of making a big discovery. And there's a lot of those. There are a ton of companies out there that are fully cashed up, have great targets, and will be drilling them. So from that standpoint, as somebody who's kind of a addicted to the thrill of discovery, I'm like a kid in a candy store right now. There are too many opportunities for me to take advantage of, but I'm liking taking some positions, at least some rooting positions in a lot of different companies.
Well, Brian, we haven't touched on the developers here, but are you still animated by companies that have resources, maybe some economic studies, but they've got key milestones on tap for 2026?
Yeah, you know, I am, and you know, Banyan is one of the top ones in that regard. It's more than doubled. It's nearly a triple at this point in our portfolio. But I think it's got a lot more to go. You know, it's currently valued at about $40 US or $45 US an ounce in the ground. Well, it's going to have a lot more ounces. Those ounces are getting better as they're uncovering higher grade starter pits, in some cases, really high grade starter pits, which was always a key milestone for the company. And that's a project that when M&A finally gets started, it's probably going to sell at what, 200, maybe $300 an ounce in the ground, perhaps even more, depending on how long they can hold out. That's a multiple of where the company is right now. So it's one of those cases where it's a wonderful mix of risk versus reward. It's not going to go to zero. Your downside is fairly well protected by 7 million ounces of resource and growing, and it's got a lot of upside at these levels still. So, yeah, I think that's the poster child for those companies that are development stage that aren't yet appreciated appropriately by the market.
All right, Brian, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you for your time on this weekend show. And again, Brian London, editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host down at the New Orleans Investment Conference, happening right around Halloween this year. If you want more information on that conference, reach out to Shad and I, and we'll put you in touch with some of Brian's team to get you set up for that conference. Brian, again, thanks for your time on this weekend show, everyone. Stick around. We're going to be right back, switching our focus to the energy sector.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.